This is an ABC podcast. This is the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
Crime, it needs to stop now and scrap the tax. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lachlan. Thank you very much.
Career firefighters get paid. They do a great job. I'm very proud of them. Volunteer firefighters do a great job.
Welcome to the Country Hour, Warwick Long with you, broadcasting live from the streets of Melbourne. Not very often I could say I could just wander out in the middle of the tram tracks, but I could right now. Where I'm standing is the corner and the intersection of Spring Street and Bourke Street in Melbourne, and right up the line, the tram lines that go up Spring Street, as far as the eye can see, I can see fire trucks with messages and all sorts of things written over them. It is the same place we brought the Country Hour to you last week, and I actually thought long and hard about whether we should bring the Country Hour back here today, because we'd be talking about the same thing, the emergency volunteers and emergency services and volunteers fund, the increase to the levy that every landholder pays for emergency services protection. But this protest was much bigger than what we saw last week. About 400 or so last week were here worried that legislation might pass. Now it has passed. There was 3,000 to 4,000, as the police were telling me earlier, completely covering this intersection. And as far as the eye can see, sitting on top of fire trucks, covering the steps of Parliament, hearing speakers from the United Firefighters Union, from farmers, and from councils, and a whole lot more. We'll bring some of that to you today on the program. We'll also bring you a whole lot of other discussions and talking points today on the program. I can see CFA gear just being left over all the light towers, all the traffic lights, all the sort of anything that where something could hanging off Parliament. You have CFA gear hanging left behind from protesters here today. The man who organised this, I'm going to have to drag him away from a conversation right now, is Andrew Wiedemann. You spoke to me at the same time, at this same place last week. There was about 400 or so. They covered the upper steps of Parliament. Today, they were clear, but the streets in front of us was a sea of people. Did you expect anything like it?
Nah, look, I didn't. I'm blown away by the numbers that have turned up here today, Warwick. And look, we stood here last week in front of 450-plus people. We said we'd be back, and we're back. And we're back in numbers. The food army is back, and we're here to stay. And we want to make a stand.
4,000 people protesting. There was calls, there was chants. We played some of it at the start of the program today. Is that enough of a protest to change a government's mind? Does it actually change anything that you're calling for?
Nah, look, it doesn't. I mean, the legislation's been passed. It's probably got royal assent by now. And that was something that, you know, over the weekend I got a message from the friends of the governor to go and actually march the people from here to the governor's house. But look, in terms of safety and working with the police, you know, Peter Marshall and myself, we've been working seriously over the last 72 hours with his team to make sure everybody here was safe. We've blocked off the top end of town in Melbourne. I mean, it's pretty big. And, you know, more than 4,500 people here, just blown away by the numbers. But the reality is, to come here, to take the time, to make the effort, the things we're asking for, you know, clearly I've been putting pressure on the coalition to make a stand, and they did today. So the coalition have come out, and Brad Batten's made a clear statement about, and Danny O'Brien, about where they are and where they stand on this piece of legislation. But this is still not going to happen and be repealed until they ever get elected, and they may not get elected unless they've got other policies that support them. So we're asking this government for a moratorium and a parliamentary inquiry into the impacts of what they've just announced.
The budget gets handed down in, I think, about 52 minutes' time. It will have this fund and this levy increase in it. It is a core part of the government getting its budget back to surplus. So that means the fight's over, doesn't it?
No, not at all, Warwick. I mean, this is going to accelerate because quite clearly the fire service levy component is an impost on businesses, asset owners right across Victoria, house owners, whatever. I mean, the farmers alone are looking at the 75% last year on the fire services levy, another 189% approximately this year. That's 264% increase. You know, most farming families are struggling at the moment to make ends meet because of the cost of living, as well as the crisis that's out there. There are four other rallies that are happening today in support of this right around the country. We'll be continuing our action, certainly on the Labor marginal seats and those inner city Melbourne seats that have actually voted in favour of this legislation. We've made that very clear today. And we were also looking at withholding that fire services levy component as well, and working standing with the Shires, the MAV, because this is clearly the people are voting and the people are standing up.
You made a quite pointed message from the stand just before this protest finished, and it was that you'll be coming for the government in marginal seats. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so look, we've been working obviously prior to all of this, looking at the landscape, looking at all of the other policy issues that we've got here in Victoria. There's no secret that mining and the renewables, the transmission lines and all these other things, Warwick, are imposing their impacts on people right across Victoria. And look, you know, the sad thing is we're actually losing people. I got told a story last night of a dairy farmer who unfortunately shot some of his herd and then shot himself. I mean, I don't know how people are dealing with this. This is just an insane situation at the moment that we're dealing in terms of people's mental health and well-being. And I can tell you, you know, why would I be chairing at the moment 23 groups across Victoria every Wednesday night coming together to try and work out a way to try and fix the situation that this government's Labor government, and you know, I called out 54 new taxes and got told no, it's actually 62. So 62 new taxes have been imposed, and that's just putting pressure on farming families, it's putting pressure on inner city families here in Melbourne, and it's a very much a government that has not been able to balance the budget. Let's face it, up till now, it's been a mess.
13 11 14 is the lifeline number if anyone needs to reach out to someone. We certainly don't want the worst to happen. So if you need to talk to someone, 13 11 14 lifeline is there for you. Andrew Wiedemann's with you, organised this protest. Just before I let you go, Andrew, how much does it take to pull something to this together? You talked a lot about the police. You and Peter Marshall were talking about respecting the orders of authorities and being peaceful in this protest. How much work goes into making that happen?
Look, it's been enormous. I mean, probably been a lot of pressure on at home and, the farming going on at the same time. And, the boys are home farming. Rodney's home sowing the crop at the moment, thankfully. And we've got other family members are here. There's farming families from all over the state, plenty from around home. They're all here today to help and support what we're trying to do and trying to achieve. But if we walk away from here today without some level of outcome, clearly, you know, a coalition government coming in, that's a tick. But the reality is it's the here and the now. And I live in the here and the now as well.
And you're confident there haven't been any bad incidents happen here?
No, look, I mean, we're volunteers, let's face it. I mean, this is, as Peter Marshall said, you know, we're the most respected groups coming together in Victoria, working together side by side, and our very, very much our focus has been on making sure that everybody that's attended here today comes here, has their protest and leaves safely. Working with the Victoria Police have been fantastic in terms of their support, because I can tell you the numbers we were talking about and what's actually turned up here today has blown me away. I mean,
there's a lot of fringe, pretty right-wing groups that have attached themselves to your protest, though, too. I can see them, multiple YouTube streamings happening just right near where we are right now. Does that concern you? Does that worry that other groups are using your protest for their own means?
Yeah, look, I guess they are, but, I mean, it's where they get their voices. And, I mean, the reality is, you know, you've got to prosecute your case, make sure that your policies are right. You know, we need to sit down as the Victorian agricultural sector and work with the coalition and ensure that we get good outcomes to, let's get this, you know, state back on track. You know, we need to start generating money, but we don't need to be taxing ourselves surely to do that. We need to be thinking about ways of creating new income streams into Victoria. We need to be looking at what we can do with what we produce, and what we produce is good food, good healthy food. And you look back to the Napthine government's process about their Food to Asia action plan. Things like that, that's where you add the value and that's where you add the profitability back into the agriculture sector.
You're talking like a coalition politician. Will you be standing next election?
Look, mate, I can tell you right now that I wouldn't be married if I was going to be a politician. I feel like this is our opportunity. I mean, I like to be able to speak my mind. I like to be able to represent the people that support me and absolutely prosecute the case for the betterment of our agricultural industry. That's what, you know, that's what I've been about all the time, Warwick.
Andrew Wiedemann, thank you very much. You've been a man in demand today, so thanks for coming down and having a chat to us.
You know, good, thanks, Warwick, and all the best to the listeners, and let's hope we get a good outcome.
That is the one of the organisers of this protest. Andrew Wiedemann spent most of the time on the stage today at the protest with the United Firefighters Union Secretary Peter Marshall, both speaking to the crowd quite a lot, among others, one of which was the mayor of Ararat, Joe Armstrong, who was speaking at the protest earlier today. Let's play some of that for you now.
Thank you, everybody, for turning out today. What a massive effort, and I'm not surprised, because this travesty of attacks is going at the very, very heart of our communities. It is sucking the money away from our local economies. It is hurting the very people who worked so hard through the emergencies over summer. And one of the things I stressed to our community over the period of the Grampians bushfires was to make good decisions early. Make good decisions early, save lives and protect property. Where is the evidence that the Victorian government has made a good decision early around this tax?
None.
There is none. The principles for service from councils to your community as elected representatives are around engagement and transparency and communication and making sure that we deliver the best outcomes for our communities. We are seeing no evidence of that in the impost of this tax. We are a small rural council in Ararat Rural City. We only have about 12,000 people and we raise about $14,000 in rates. Now this tax is going to take another $5 million. $5 million from our small rural shire. Shame indeed. That is equivalent to basically the suburb of Essendon. There are about 12,000 people in Essendon. Imagine if you were an urban community and you had $5 million being sucked out of your local economy. How are our sporting organisations going to cope when people are unable to participate because they cannot meet the cost? How are volunteer organisations going to cope when the goodwill that supports those organisations cannot be sustained? How can people on fixed incomes cope when they are already at the brunt of the cost of living pressures and there is no room in their budgets to be able to meet this cost? How are renters going to cope when landlords are unable to absorb the increased cost of this tax? How are councils going to administer the cost of collecting this tax? It's not right that councils collect this tax. It's a state tax. Now, the previous iteration of the tax as a fire services levy was going to it had been taking about $2 million out of our community, and a small council could cope in handling that. But to bring it in with no modelling of the effect on our community, no regard for capacity to pay, and no commitment to ensure that we're actually going to get the monies back into our community, is just appalling. It's a travesty of a tax. Thank you so much for coming along. Let's defend our community.
That's Joe Armstrong from Ararat, the mayor there speaking at the protest earlier today. You're listening to The Country Hour. We're at the steps of Parliament House again, and fire trucks are on the move after the protest has finished and 4,000 or so people have dispersed. I'm looking at the Hensley Park, Rippenhurst, Inverleigh number 2, tankers full of people driving off the tram tracks and moving their way down Spring Street. More are on the way. We'll keep moving, though, because there is some breaking news. Nationals leader David Littleproud has announced his party is going to split from its coalition partner, the Liberals, after failing to reach an agreement. Emboldened by the election result that saw the minor party retain its lower house seat while the Liberal Party went backwards, the Nationals have been suggesting the long-held arrangement was up for discussion. The parties have been negotiating on a range of issues, including nuclear, net zero and the Regional Australia Future Fund. Mr. Littleproud said the National Party will sit alone on a matter of principle, but the party will continue to work constructively with the Liberals. I'm standing here. Can you just...
After the discussions that both Susan Lay and I have had over the ensuing period, our party room has got to a position where we will not be re-entering a coalition agreement with the Liberal Party after this election. What we have got to a position is that the National Party will sit alone on a principled basis, on the basis of looking forward, not having to look back and to try and actually regain important policy pieces that change the lives of the people we represent.
That is David Littleproud, leader of the Nationals. It's getting mighty loud here on the Country Hour. Warro Yuri is going past at the moment, and a whole lot more fire trucks are. I spoke to three farmers earlier holding their signs, some young blokes chatting to us, and I asked them what they were doing here. I'm standing here. Can you just say your name and where you're from, boys?
Anthony Bartlett, Pernham West.
And Edwin Rowe from Sutherland's Creek.
Alfie Rowe from Sutherland's Creek.
Oh, well, I'm assuming you two are related. You've got some signs. You've got some drench around your throat as well. Can you read your sign for us?
It says, God save the Queen, for nothing will save Jacinta Allen.
And I've just got, don't bite from the hand that feeds you.
Their eyes are dull, their heads are flat, they have no brains at all.
You've come a long way to get here out near Warrnambool.
Yeah, it's normally a four-hour trip to get to Melbourne, 3.5-4-hour trip, so I came down to Geelong last night and caught the train this morning.
You guys are youngish farmings, I'm assuming. Why did you want to be here today?
Oh, this is going to affect all farmers, even future farmers, and I want to be a farmer in the future. I lease some ground at the moment off my parents, but I want to buy my own farm, and it's going to affect me in the future.
And it's the same as Anthony. We're just getting these surprises and tax increases. We don't mind tax increases if it's necessary and being discussed, but it's just a backdoor thinking. Yeah.
And do you think this will change anything? What do you hope a protest like this achieves?
Well, we definitely hope for, at least a reduction, but we'd prefer if the tax was scrapped altogether, but that might be being a bit optimistic.
Have you guys protested much before?
I've never done this, but you need to unite and support people, and people in the country are doing it tough, especially mental health and this time of... it's unprecedented for this time of year.
Well, thanks very much for having a chat to us.
Thanks, Warwick.
There are some of the people that are here today. I'm looking at an old Swifts Creek fire truck go past at the moment, and a whole lot of other protesters are sort of still mingling around, cheering on the fire brigade trucks as they go past and free up room on the tram tracks. It looks like the tram tracks are going to start running again shortly here. One of the big announcements, and you heard Andrew Wiedemann speak about this earlier, is the Coalition announced today they're going to scrap the tax if they win government next year. They had been tight-lipped on that very point until now. We've been asking them for a couple of weeks if this was going to happen or not. Andrew Wiedemann's claiming credit as all the protest actions has dragged them along. I spoke to Danny O'Brien, the leader of the Nationals in Victoria, for his point of view and to find out what scrap the tax actually means.
Oh, look, it's huge. It's one of the biggest I've certainly seen in this time was, and as it should be. People are angry about this right around the state, and it's no surprise that there's such a big turnout here. And you know, it speaks volumes too. When the government says this tax is about emergency services and volunteers, and the vast bulk of the people who are here on the steps today are our emergency services and volunteers. And I think the government needs to really reconsider that because they've clearly got this wrong.
And there has been pressure on what a coalition governor do about this, and you did not make any announcements pre what happened in Parliament last week when it finally passed early in the hours of Friday morning. But today, you and your colleague Brad Batten, the leader of the Liberal parties, have been up on stage. What have you promised?
Well, we have committed to scrap this tax, and we will do that if we're elected in November next year. This is a $2 billion hit on Victorians, and the government's made no case for it in terms of emergency services needs. This is really all about trying to fix the government's budget bottom line. And it's, you know, it speaks volumes that you've got council, the United Firefighters Union, the VFF, CFA volunteers, the Liberals and Nationals all on the same page on this. This is clearly a budget issue, and the government is trying to take that money from regional Victorians, from all Victorians indeed. We will scrap the tax, but what we need to do is keep this momentum going all the way to the election next year and scrap the government with it, because that's the only way we're going to get rid of this tax.
Has a leader of the Nationals in Victoria ever stood side by side with the United Fires Union Secretary?
I don't know if that's the case, was, themselves, but certainly they are on the same page as us. They see what this is. They see it's not about supporting emergency services or volunteers. It's about fixing a budget black hole, and absolutely we're on the same page on that issue, and we will continue to fight this. It's great to have so many people from across the spectrum of the state here today. Disappointing to hear that there's some trains that have been blocked up both on the Gippsland and the Western Vic lines, and not as many people have got here, but it's just there's thousands and thousands of people here, and they're sending a clear message to the government.
And when you say you will scrap the tax, what do you mean by that? Do you take it back to the original fire service levy? Do you get rid of it altogether? What are you planning to do?
That's what we'll do. We'll take it back to the fire services levy. The government's made no case that this is that there's a problem with the fire services levy. We've already seen big increases in that as well, but we'll take it back to the fire services levy. The big issue with this this tax is it's being used to fund core government services. So bringing in a new tax that funds 000 and Forest Fire Management and Emergency Management Victoria, which are government services that have always been funded out of general revenue. Totally unfair on Victorians to be taxed twice for this.
So what about the SES? They say they're dramatically underfunded. They supported this because they can see sustainable funding model. If you scrap it, they won't have their money, will they?
No, we will continue to support the SES, and we are committing today to a long-term sustainable funding for the SES, but out of consolidated revenue. The reality is, whether it's out of the tax or out of consolidated revenue, there's no guarantees from this Labor government on additional funding for either the SES or CFA. So we will make sure that the SES is looked after. We understand the issues that have been there, but we don't think that that ordinary Victorians should be paying for government services that have always been funded out of consolidated revenue, like 000, like Forest Fire Management. We'll scrap the tax, and we need to scrap the government in November next year.
Well, November next year is a long way away. Did you do everything? Could your side of politics do any more to try and stop the passage of this bill through Parliament like you did last week?
Oh, look, we tried as hard as we could. We only got certain numbers in the Parliament, and so we voted against it. We worked with the crossbench to try and convince them to oppose it. We were successful at the first iteration, but sadly the Greens and the Independents crossed last week and voted with the government. They stand condemned for that.
Do you know what was traded off for that? Do you know if there's future legislation coming that was part of a deal with the Greens to get their vote?
Well, that's the big question was, and to wonder what happens between government and Greens and Independents on these sorts of issues. What we do know is that Victorians are going to suffer as a result of it. Every resident, we're hearing it right now, doubling of the residential rate, doubling of the commercial rate, 64% industrial rate, and farmers 150%. I mean, and part of that deal was, you know, it was 189% for farmers, now reduced to 150. Does the government and the Greens and the Independents think that we should be thanking them for that? A tripling of the rate that you pay, and particularly at a time of drought when things are already tough, when we've got a cost of living crisis affecting the whole state, this is a very, very bad tax, and we will scrap it and make sure that those savings are delivered back to everyday Victorians.
So the government says they need to do this because of issues like climate change are putting a strain on the resources. Those issues will still be there if you scrap this tax, won't they?
Those issues will still be there, but those issues have always been there. We've always had floods and storms and fires, and that is just government spin, frankly, to say that this is about climate change. This is about fixing the government's budget black hole. We see that because they're bringing those government agencies across. We think that's totally unfair. This was very much a budget decision, not an emergency management or an environmental or climate change decision, and we need to scrap it.
You're about to walk inside. It's budget day. The budget's in surplus, though. It's not that bad, is it?
Well, the only reason the budget's in surplus is because of this $2 billion tax. You can do the sums pretty easily. They're saying a $600 million surplus. That wouldn't be there if this tax hadn't been baked into the bottom line in December last year and subsequently passed in the Parliament. So the government has got all sorts of trouble managing finances, and as a result, Victorians are getting whacked with these taxes.
You had to fight your way through about 1,000 people to come and speak to us today, but we appreciate it. Danny O'Brien, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. Cheers.
That's Danny O'Brien, the leader of the Nationals in Victoria, speaking to you here on the Country Hour. The coalition say they'll scrap the tax is their language, but that means just dropping it back down to where the fire service levy was at. That's the detail he has provided to you today on the Country Hour. Interesting, a coalition in Victoria making an announcement like that. At this lunchtime, we have learnt the coalition federally have split. David Littleproud making that announcement a short time ago. I saw Dan Tehan and Sam Birrell, both federal, there's a federal Liberal and a federal National members walking around here earlier today. I've been keeping a keen eye out for them ever since. They've disappeared as soon as that announcement came out. Otherwise, I'd be asking them a couple of questions about what the split in the coalition means at a federal level. That's what we're finding out this lunchtime as well. On the Country Hour, coming to you from the intersection of Bourke and Spring Streets, where all the fire trucks are just clearing at the moment. I saw Glen Allardyce, Lake Bowlack, a few other places go past just before. Now traffic is opening up and we're seeing a lot of protesters start to filter away down the sidewalks, footpaths on both sides of the street. It is time for Rural News right now, though, on the Country Hour. After Rural News, you'll hear from some more protesters that are here. Plus, there's been another detection of that tomato virus that has been found in Victoria for the first time at a place at Katunga. We're getting that details from Agriculture Victoria on what this second detection is and where it is. We'll bring that to you on the program. But right now, Jane McNaughton has rural news for you. Welcome back, Jane.
Good afternoon, Woz. Vodafone has called for Australia's consumer watchdog, the ACCC, to investigate Telstra for misleading consumers over the extent of its mobile network coverage, which it says has resulted in unfair market advantages. Telstra's claim that it had a mobile network coverage area of 3 million square kilometres covering 99.7% of the Australian population, but this month had failed to state that that figure was based on consumers using an external antenna and booster. Carol Bennett is the Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network.
Telstra have allegedly made claims about its mobile network coverage that it covers 3 million square kilometres, that's 99.7% of population coverage, that it's more than double Optus's network and three times Vodafone or TPG's network. So if these very disturbing allegations are true, we would be really concerned because it does mean that many people rely on the marketing that Telstra provide to enter into expensive plans on the presumption that Telstra is the only provider that can service their needs. So that's a really serious misleading and deceptive conduct allegation.
International trade through the Red Sea could be resuming very soon after almost 2 years of disruption to the shipping route. That's the analysis from Andrew Whitelaw, co-founder of Episode3.net. The closure of the Red Sea has meant ships leaving the port of Fremantle bound for markets in Israel and Europe have had to go a long way around. Andrew Whitelaw says the delays have been affecting WA farmers significantly, but there is light at the end of the tunnel.
The Red Sea and going through the Suez Canal is one of the most busy shipping routes in the world. And since Israel started retaliating to Palestine, the Houthi rebels have been attacking shipping that's going through that Red Sea Strait. And so that has meant that shipping has effectively had to go around the bottom of South Africa to get to Europe or from Europe to Asia and vice versa. And it's significant because it costs more and it takes longer to get there. And we saw some of the biggest rises in container rates and bulk freight rates when the Houthis started attacking vessels. And effectively, it was too costly to go through that area. You couldn't get insurance, etc. But it's changed in the last couple of weeks with basically the US has taken a bit more of a stringent sort of view on it. And so they have been attacking Houthi positions over the last probably month or so. And it looks like there is a ceasefire, which the Houthis have said that they will not attack shipping anymore. And so it'll take a bit of time, but I think that over time there'll be a bit more confidence that vessels can go through that part of the world without being hit by missiles, I guess.
Queensland's stock route is set to be very busy in the coming months, with the Great Australian Charity Cattle Drive kicking off over the weekend. There's more than 1,600 head of cattle being taken from Longreach in western Queensland to Roma in the south of the state, more than 700 kilometres over 85 consecutive days. The trip has been in the work for years, and it's a nod to the role the beef industry plays in feeding the nation while also raising funds for food insecurity in a time when many are struggling to put food on the table. Madeline McCosta has this report.
9-year-old Mason Prow knows exactly what he wants to be when he's older.
Meat contractor. Like Dad.
His dad, Billy Prowell, has been working as a drover in Western Queensland for almost 35 years, and he knows Queensland's stock routes, or the long paddock, like the back of his hand. He says the country hasn't looked this good in a long time.
Oh, well, we've got a pretty good start in the weather, plenty of grass and in the season, plenty of feed and everything. A lot of trips we get sometimes, we've got cattle on the stock route just to keep them alive till the owners get rain or find adjustment or something like that. But this time we're just travelling to the Roma sale yards. But it's great to see the stock route come back. It's really grassed up and it's had a good spell, and it's probably the best thing for it, yeah.
And that's today's Rural News.
Thanks very much for that. Jane McNaughton there with Rural News for you today. Warwick Long broadcasting from the steps of Parliament House today. I'm basically almost in the gutter on Spring Street. Many of you would probably like that mental image. Someone who's probably, hopefully, giggling along is Joanna Hughes, who's a senior forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, can take you through the full weather forecast. Hi, Jo.
G'day, Wazza. How you doing?
Yep, good. Back in the city and another blue sky day. It feels like we're having too many of those, but how many more are we set for this week?
Well, definitely blue sky day today, as you're seeing in the city, and pretty much everyone around the state would have barely a cloud in the sky at the moment. As a result of those clear skies, another very cold morning. The most significant cold temperature this morning was -4.1 at Canegulk. It's an annual record, the coldest it's ever been recorded at that station in 22 years of station data there. So that's your fun fact of the cold morning this morning. We've got another cold morning on the cards for tomorrow, with temperatures similarly down to between sort of 0 and -3 across much of the state. So we've got a severe frost warning out for the north central, northeast central and west and south Gippsland districts, and just your regular frost warning for remaining districts across the state tomorrow morning. In terms of what we're expecting later in the week, it starts to get a little bit interesting. So pretty dry day tomorrow and for most of Thursday. We do start to see the hint of some patchy shower and light sort of rain creeping across the border from New South Wales late in the day on Thursday. Now, that's looking at just a few millimetres along the far eastern border there, sort of between Orewodonga and down to Mallacoota. There's just a few millimetres on the forecast at the moment. But Friday is looking like the wettest day in the outlook. It's not a heap of rain. I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. But at the moment, what we're looking at is probably 2 to 5 millimetres through eastern parts of the north central and central districts, and into western south Gippsland and the northern country there as well, so 2 to 5 millimetres through those areas. And then as you're extending eastwards from there for the northeast district and for east Gippsland as well, more in that 5 to 10 millimetre sort of range, and that's associated with a low pressure system that's moving down the east coast of Australia over the next couple of days, so bringing a little bit of a drink to eastern Victoria. As we continue over the weekend, there's a little bit of lingering moisture on Saturday, but that's probably just maybe up to 5 millimetres or so over the peaks of the eastern ranges, and less than a millimetre expected elsewhere. And similarly for Sunday, just a couple more drops up over the eastern ranges, and maybe up to 3 millimetres in the far southwest as well. So better than what I was talking to you about last week, Wazza, where it was a big fat nothing. There's at least a hint of some rainfall for predominantly the eastern parts of the state in the outlook period.
Oh, well, Joanna, thanks very much, though, for the update. Well, you've given us a fair bit to obsess over at least the next week, I suppose, so we'll have to keep an eye on it. Thanks very much for the update. Just before I let you go, actually, frost-wise, is it many mornings in the forecast going to be as cold as what a lot of areas of the state got today?
Tomorrow is looking pretty cold again as well, so I'd say fairly similar temperatures. But then from Thursday morning onwards, it's still cold out there, but sort of above zero for most places, and then gradually warming up from there for the mornings. And we'll just have to wait and see what happens with that rainfall over the weekend. It's looking more consistent in the modelling than it was yesterday, but take it with a grain of salt for sure.
Ripper, I'm glad I remembered to ask. Thanks very much for that, Joanna Hughes there, with all your details from the Bureau. You're listening to The Country Hour. We're broadcasting from the steps of Parliament again. Last week was a first for me, and I didn't think I'd be back so quickly. There are a lot of CFA uniforms hanging from light posts here. A few hats have been left behind, a few signs. One says, "We are fair people just wanting a fair go." There are still probably a couple of hundred people milling around here as well. So the protest is gone. The thousands have largely moved on, but there's still a large sort of crowd gathered around here at the steps of Parliament as we go to air today. And actually, I caught up with some of the people whilst the protest was going on to find out where they come from. Actually found a couple of Country Hour listeners in the crowd as well. And here are some of their stories. So who have I got here? What's your name?
Jeff Nankervell.
Where are you from, Jeff?
Canberra's Forest Fire Brigade.
What do you want to say today?
All these people here volunteer their time to go to car accidents outside Melbourne for free. So anybody from Melbourne that leaves to go on country roads, they're not protected like the government saying, because we all get there way before any policeman or any paid up fire trucks or anything.
And you're all standing down. Well, a lot of your units are standing down at the moment.
That's right. So we won't get the the pager calls, and we won't know when there's an accident and all that.
And I imagine turning up to accidents comes at some personal cost too, yeah?
Yeah, it affects you when you go to accidents and people are chopped up and you call helicopters in, and you all work as a team with the police and the SES when they turn up, and it's really good. But the chicken tree like this and no one's going to turn up. So it's dangerous for everybody, not only country people, but for city people too.
Well, so why did you come today, Jeff?
To make that point. We brought the truck down, and most town people don't understand what's happening in the government, what's happening now. So we've got to do something.
Well, thanks very much for having a chat to us.
You're welcome.
Tony, can I grab you? You made an interesting point to me before. You turned around and you said something. What was it?
I said, Warwick, I said, look around the crowd and ask yourself, what are we all doing here? We need to be back home in our regions and on our farms doing what we do best. Look what's brought us here. It's unified us. And we have to scrap this tax.
So how did you get here today? What time did you get up and travel down?
I was up at 5 o'clock in the morning, not as early as some. A neighbour, my CFA captain, picked me up at 6:45, and we made the 7:15 train from Castlemaine, along with a lot of other yellow overalls, and I had to stand all the way too, by the way, which I thought was a good sign.
So full train today?
Full train, absolutely, yes.
And what do you think can happen out of a protest like this? We look out now, there's fire trucks as far as the eye can see. There's about 3,000 to 4,000 people here. The budget's still going to go ahead. So what do you think today comes out of today?
I think as a communities, as a group of communities that are under stress, I might add, I think we have to talk to our councils and work something out with them so that this tax is not paid. And this is not the first of the actions will continue. And I suspect that there are a lot of other issues that are annoying people, irritating them and causing a lot of stress in regional Australia. And this is just a symptom of what's happening.
Thanks for having a chat to us.
Thank you, Warwick.
Rebecca, you've come from central Victoria. Why did you come down here today?
I was here last Tuesday as well, Warwick, because I'm passionate about this one.
So why? Why are you passionate about this?
Look, I'm a custodian of the farm. I married into farming. I grew up in the city. I studied agricultural science. And I see this. I love the word custodian. This has come to me from the farming community. And it's a family property that's been in the family for over 100 years. And I'd really like to pass it on to the next generation. I don't want to see it taken up by housing subdivisions and wind turbines and solar panels. I want it there to grow food and fibre for Victoria, and I just worry where we're headed.
So when you say custodians, do you feel that long line of custodianship is at risk with increased taxes like this, or is it something farmers have the ability to pay?
Warwick, I love farming. I love what I do. But my husband and I, whether we make farming hard work, I don't know, but it takes a lot of hours and it's 7 days a week. And if we're not there, if there's an injury on the farm, and we have had a couple, unfortunately, we're the ones that have to pick up the slack. So it is full on and I love it, but I don't know that I want our children to do it, because it's getting harder and taxes like this just make this job harder.
Thanks very much for having a chat.
Thanks, Warwick.
That's Rebecca Hamilton speaking to the Country Hour today. Let's go to Peter. I ran into Peter in the crowd as well. And after that, you'll hear more about this new detection of a tomato virus. But let's go to Peter first. You sent a message to the Country Hour, Peter, that this is one of the first protests you've ever been to.
Yes, it is, yeah. I've never protested in my whole life. Never felt as strongly as I have today.
So where have you travelled from today?
From Dookie, I have.
Are many other people from Dookie here?
There is quite a few people from Dookie and the surrounding district.
So give me your review of your first protest.
Massive. It's a massive protest. A lot of strong voices being heard today.
Do you think it'll get much change, though?
We can only hope, Warwick. We can only hope.
All right, well, thanks for chatting to us.
Thank you, Warwick.
Have you got the turnout gear here? You got the CFA gear. What are you going to do with that?
I'm going to chuck it on the pole behind me as a thank you to Jacinta for more of my time in the CFA.
Thanks for having a chat. Hey, Peter, can I steal you for a chat if that's all right? Oh, sorry, Evan. Yeah, good to see you, mate. Sorry about that. Peter Lawless, you're here today. You're in your Burramond Fire Brigade gear. You've come down. I think I saw you at the Tuesday protest last week. Why do you keep coming down? It's three and a half hours for you to get here?
Yes, Warwick, it is. It takes about 4 hours to get down. And, it's a huge commitment. There's a lot of other people that have made a bigger commitment than me. But to me, look, this is the line in the sand time for volunteers. I think you can push us so far, but I'm out. We're done, and a lot of others have the younger ones. How do you keep their morale up when they see this sort of thing happen? They're not going to pay $25,000 or $30,000 to be a volunteer.
Yeah, and that's what you see as the issue here.
Well, I gave the example of our little area. Our little district is roughly 10 mile by 10 mile with a fire brigade. In that area, at the rate that it's been struck, and I've done the land values, it's $430,000 that gets sucked out of that little community. Now, how many young people could we employ, or how do we keep that next generation to feel as though they're valued? And that's the slap in the face for me.
3,000 to 4,000 people here. People are still calling out now. Do you think it gets changed? Do you think this is the way to get the change that you want?
Oh, Warwick, it will change, because this is just the first of many of these things until it's changed, until she steps down. And I'm hearing whispers that she'll get that much pressure on that she will have to step down. And that's sad. And the reality of this is that this will be her legacy, this government's legacy. And you don't really want somebody that probably comes into politics meaning to do good things and then just go out that'll have something hung around their neck for the rest of their life.
That is Peter Lawless from the Burramond CFA speaking about his area as well. We'll leave the protest. Look, we've talked a lot about this. If you want to listen to more about this, you can go and listen to the Victorian Country Hour podcast. A lot of different programs on this topic there. Just search Victorian Country Hour wherever you get your podcasts. Let's go to some other big news happening for agriculture in Victoria right now. The tomato rugose fruit virus in Victoria. It was revealed on Friday. Another detection of this tomato virus that had never been found in Victoria before has been found in a glasshouse in northern Victoria, which comes after that first discovery in January this year. The source of the infested seedlings is under investigation because they came from a New South Wales nursery, a state which has never had the virus. Emma Field spoke with Victoria's Chief Plant Health Officer, Dr. Stephen Dibley, to try and find out what was going on.
The infected business here in Victoria has undertaken the destruction and decontamination of previous crops as per the National Response Plan. And as part of the replanting protocol to get back into business, we've been testing the seedlings when they first arrive. And through this testing, we've picked up a positive detection.
Now, the curious thing about this is, according to your statement, the seedlings that business received in northern Victoria came from New South Wales. Now, that's a state that has never had this virus detected.
That is correct, yes. So they did come from a nursery in New South Wales, and you're correct. There's been no confirmed detections in New South Wales, and the business that it came from has no connections to known infected properties.
So what are the next steps based on that information?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we're continuing to do our investigations on where potentially this virus has come from. There is more tracing to do and undertaking surveillance, continuing surveillance. And, yeah, we're just continuing to look into that situation to try and understand how this positive detection arose.
Now, we have a statement from the Department of Prime Industries and Regional Development in New South Wales. They confirmed that the virus has never been found in New South Wales crop, and they don't think that the business that sent the seedlings to Victoria has ever received any material from South Australia or Victoria, which are the two states that currently have it. So what does it mean for the business in Victoria that's been affected?
So what it means for the business in Victoria is at the moment we're just essentially understanding the situation before we can make a determination on what actions we need to take on the ground here. At the moment, these seedlings that have just arrived are continuing to grow in the Victorian property under quarantine, so there's no risk of them spreading further, but we're not undertaking any destruction at this stage until we understand the situation. So at the moment, it's for the business. It's just continuing on the production cycle under these control conditions, and then we'll work with them as we move forward.
Now, is it possible that this, it's not an outbreak in New South Wales, but you've detected a plant material that's carrying the virus. Is it possible that this is completely separate to the two other outbreaks that are known, which are South Australia and Victoria?
Really, at this stage, it's too early to understand what it is. We haven't ruled anything in or out based on the information that we've got. So we really need to do some more work to understand whether it could or could be a separate detection.
And do you understand the work that the New South Wales DPI are doing in this space?
Yes. We've been working very closely with the New South Wales DPIRT in this situation to understand that where it's come from potentially and the movements. We're working with them on a daily basis.
And what is it you need the community to know about this virus?
This virus is a quite infective virus there, but it is contained, as far as we understand at the moment, it is contained to the properties that we've picked it up on. But we would like the community to just keep an eye out for this virus in their own solanaceous crops, in tomatoes and capsicums. And if they do see that, we do want them to report, because we want to understand if it is present elsewhere.
Now, this virus is not a health problem for people. It's just a production problem for businesses. Is that right?
That's right, yes. Yeah. So no health problems from eating the fruit that's infected at all. It just it makes the fruit look not very appetising, and it does have some yield impacts on production. We're also just trying to understand both with New South Wales and the Commonwealth Department about potential seed stocks that have come through and generated this. So we're trying to look at all avenues to understand the situation.
And is there anything else we need to know about this detection of the virus in Victoria?
Nothing really extra. It doesn't really change the situation in terms of other businesses. It's still contained at the infected property, and we're working very collaboratively with the business to ensure that it remains that way.
That's Victoria's Chief Plant Health Officer, Dr. Stephen Dibley, speaking there to Emma Field. You're listening to The Country Hour. You might be able to hear the trams are running again. All the fire trucks have moved on their way. Well, not all of them, actually. If I look up the road in the bike lane, there's about another four or five fire trucks left behind. But the bulk that were blocking this intersection have moved on, and so have a lot of the protesters from Victorian Parliament, where the state budget is about to be handed down in about 8 minutes or so time. So I'm sure you'll be hearing a lot more on that on ABC radio programs throughout the afternoon. I always think this is a great day to listen to Statewide Drive or Melbourne Drive, for that matter. Depending on which radio station you're closer to, you get a lot of details on what's in the budget and what it's going to mean to you. We are coming up towards the end of the program today, so we better head to livestock markets. To market. Let's start with the cattle markets to kick things off today, and we'll head to Lee and Gatha. Brendan Fletcher's been there for us. G'day, Fletch.
G'day, Warwick. Numbers decreased to 1,560. That's 2,370 fewer, with most of the usual buyers operating in a dearer market in places. Quality declined in the bullocks, remained mixed in the trade, and cows represented a smaller proportion of the sale. Finished trade lots were in short supply, gaining up to 20 cents. Ground steers to feed lifted 24 cents, while bullocks eased with quality an issue. Manufacturing steers lifted 10 to 20 cents for most. Heavy heifers eased 10 cents. Cows recovered 30 to 85 cents. Heavy bulls eased 5. Vealers sold from 300 to 410. Yearling trade steers 350 to 451. The heifer portion 330 to 440. Ground steers 370 to 418. Bullocks 360 to 400. Heavy Friesian manufacturing steers 250 to 333. Crossbreds 312 to 378. Most light and medium weight cows 160 to 260. Heavyweights 238 to 308. Heavy bulls 280 to 335. This is Brendan Fletcher reporting for MLA.
Let's go back to Wodonga Cattle. Graham Richard is there for you today. Good afternoon, Graham.
Good afternoon. Numbers continue to slip to 1838. The quality also remains very mixed, with only a sprinkling of prime cattle through the yarding. A couple of highlights were several pens of well-conditioned steers and heifers, 480 to 540 kilos, and a few Euro vealers. Most of the grown cattle were lacking condition, and there was a very mixed run of cows. The prices were dearer on the trade cattle and the better bred feeders, while planer conditioned cattle were cheaper. The Euro vealer steers reached 406, but most sales were between 340 and 360. Vealer heifers 320 to 370. Feeder steers medium weight, mainly 350 to 414. Heavy feeders 310 to 338, up 10 to 15 cents on breed. Feeder heifers eased around 10 cents, with the medium weights 325 to 352. Grown steers were firm, 330 to 365. Heavy cows were 10 to 12 stronger, 262 to 298. The medium weights also 10 to 12 better, 180 to 260. And this has been Graham Richard.
Thanks very much for that, Graham. Let's go to the sheep and lamb market now. We'll go to Ballarat Lamb. Shiona Lamb is there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Lamb numbers dropped slightly to 23,800 drawn for. Quality was mixed. Lambs off feed presented in excellent condition, while over half the yarding were lambs lacking weight and shape. All the usual buyers were, and some extras were on the rail in a stronger market across most weights and grades. Light store and trade lamb sold firm to 5 dearer. Medium trade sold 5 to 10 better. Heavy trade gained $10. Extra heavy export lamb sold to $336, selling 10 to 15 better. Throughout the yarding, there were sales to $25 a head dearer, with sales reaching to the mid-900 cents a kilo carcass weight throughout the yarding. Lambs back to the paddock made from 38 to 161, and lambs to feed on sold from 160 to $207 a head. Light trade lambs under 18 kilos sold from 98 to 159. Trade lambs 18 to 22 kilos sold 160 to 207, and 22 to 26 sold 193 to 225. There is still 12,000 sheep to be sold. This is Shiona Lamb at Ballarat for MLA.
Thank you, Shiona. Lucky last in the market run today is off to Shepparton. Is it sunny back home for me, Nicole Varley?
Oh, she's fairly overcast, but I tell you what, I got beanie and gloves on still. So, anyway,
I'm hot in Melbourne, so you better tell us if the market was hot or not.
Okay, we had 2,400 head yarded here at Shepparton this week. Quality deteriorated as greater numbers of stalk, drought-conditioned cows were penned. Feelers were also dominant in the yards, and fewer export buyers were present. Prices were largely buffered considering the quality restraints. Restockers were active, helping to hold up some of the prices. The vealers made from 330 to 459 cents, yearling steers 345 to 435 to the trade, yearling heifers 321 to 428. 400 to 500 kilo steers to 385, 5 to 600 made to from 310 to $4. 600 kilo plus steers 320 to 385. The cows dairy 185 to 255 cents, and the heavy beef cows 232 to 288 cents. This is Nicole Varley from Shepparton.
Thanks very much for that, Nicole. Just before we get going on the country air today, a lot of text still coming in. I think I said morning frogs, not frost, earlier on the program because someone says it's not really a cold start with morning frogs about the place. Oh, I'm sorry. There's been a lot of action here today and a lot of trucks and people moving around the place, which has been really interesting. Some of more text saying it would be interesting to know the extent of attendance from the Premier's electorate. I can't say I met anybody from the Premier's electorate. I will reiterate, we have put in a number of requests with the Victorian Government for them to speak to you on the program about the Emergency Services and Volunteers Fund, about the levy, about what people, some, many people here were calling tax and its increase and what it means for regional Victoria, what it means for emergency services, and they haven't had anyone available to talk to you. We have been able to speak to the Agriculture Minister. She came on the program on Friday mainly to talk about drought assistance. We did put in a couple of questions about the Emergency Services and Volunteers Fund while we're at it, but other than that, no one has been available from the government, and that request remains open. If someone from the government wants to come on our program and speak to us, we are more than happy to do that. More of your texts coming in saying, Warwick, I feel they should drive all the CFA trucks to Melbourne and leave them there. That would make them rethink the fire levy increase strongly. Just leave the trucks there, says Tiger. I believe one district was thinking about that, but I'm not sure if any of that has eventuated. Although, as I look down Bourke Street, there's about five or six trucks still there, and there's about three or four to my left down Spring Street at the moment, too. Another one saying, are there any politicians with you in the gutter in Spring Street, Warwick, Nathan at Wodonga? Very funny. No, I didn't have any politicians really to talk to today. When I spoke to Danny O'Brien, it was further up on the steps, so I can't say any politicians have been there. Plenty of other texts coming in. Was a couple of comments, says Stephen. Bugger and all rain in west of Vic. We've all contributed to climate change through our society, so we should all contribute equally, not expect a section of the community to bear the brunt. How much of a fossil fuel companies and projects contributing? 3, don't let this government divide and conquer. We need to stick together.